Okay, welcome to the Gary House.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Podcast. Today we have got Mr. Chris King with us. And Chris is someone that I've known for a good few years now in the running world. After we first got talking, I think he got in touch with me on the back of a few of my videos, and he called me for a chat mid video. I was shooting one of the videos in the forest and I was dancing around like a prat, and he called me. So we had a good chat. We've been friends ever since, and I've been lucky enough to spend some time with him and his Beyond the Ultimate team out in Noidart for the Highland Ultra. Beyond the Ultimate run like some amazing multi-day events across the world. He's going to speak to us about that. Also, more recently, they've taken on the Spine Race, which if you are a ultra runner, or I guess just a runner, you will have probably heard of the Spine Race now. A bit about the history of how they've taken it on and where they're looking to go with that. But he's much more than just a race director and owner of those races. He's a new family man. He's taken on a massive challenge himself, which he's going to tell you about. And he's also been there and done it. He's a great ultra runner in his own right. So when it comes to whether it's coaching or whether it's racing, whether it's extreme environments or just running a business, yeah, Chris is a very interesting guy. And I was really grateful that he could spend an hour with us on one of the first podcasts for the Gary House podcast. Okay, that's a lot of podcasts. All Chris's info and links will be in the usual place. Not sure where that is just yet because I'm new to this still again. They will be there. And if you've got any questions for Chris, his social media is Chris_Kingy on Instagram. But yeah, without further ado, I guess, here is Chris King on the Gary House podcast. Chris King today, expedition leader, ultra runner, storyteller, owner of Beyond the Ultimate and the Spine Race, trustee of the Big Moose charity, and I know he's got a young family now too. I want to know, why haven't you stopped running?
Well, I did for a while, but I am back running regularly. So, okay. Maybe because I need it. I'm a stupid adult that needs stupid things to deal with their stupid mental health. It's probably the best way to do it. I didn't run for a long time. I kind of, even though I work in the running industry, I kind of dipped out, bit of burnout, whatever it may have been. Just felt like I needed some time off, and then just got back to running again relatively consistently and stuff now. So yeah, it's definitely, without sounding too cliche, it's probably just because it just makes me a bit of a nicer person to be around, mainly. If I'm not running, I'm quite a horrible person.
Yeah. How long have you been running?
So I started back in 2012, probably with some, with any sort of consistency. I ran 2012 to 2014. I would probably class myself more as a club runner. I was like running for 5K times and all that kind of stuff. And then 2014 onwards, I'd started getting into ultras and becoming a proper runner, if you could call it that. And then, yeah, I did that and did it. I was okay. I did pretty well until about 2018, 19. And then I'd say the last 2-3 years has just been, you know, I've been focusing on business and family and all those kind of, being in the trenches, I think they call it. Yeah, so quite a while. Nearly, what is that? Nearly 10 years, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. Not as long as me, actually. I thought you might be about the same.
Well, I've been dabbling, but I'd been dabbling running. I've always played sports, but I wouldn't have said that I went out for a training run until like 2014. I think that's when it counts, isn't it? When you go out for running to train to get better at running, I think that's probably 2014. I was knocking around early 2012s trying to do 5Ks, but not really caring if I was fast or not.
And like you say, now running is your business, or your business evolves around running.
Yeah.
Do you find that that's why you maybe not fell out of love of running, but did that add into the fact that why you had a period of not running? Because I only asked that because when I started out, running was, it was all about getting better and kind of improving. I found it as a real help in life. It was only when, the business became more of a priority, I guess. So I was a runner that was coaching a bit, and now I'm definitely a coach that runs when I can. Race-wise, I still train every day, but I can't just go off every weekend, and I can't have weeks off now all the time. And with the kids, it's definitely business first, then kind of races and things like that. Was it the same for you?
Yeah, I think it does. It did sometimes feel like a busman's holiday. You know, like you use running to escape from stuff, but when you're trying to escape from running and you're running, it didn't really add up. But I think the biggest reason was that it was just, without sounding too hippie, I was just doing a bit of soul searching. I was running for all the wrong reasons. I was running, I think a lot of people are probably guilty of this. I was setting myself like a big thing to do, a big goal, and obsessing over it. And then not running because I loved running. I was just running because I wanted to achieve that goal. And it was strange for me to hang out with people like Adam Kimball, who loved running and would, you know, like we'd go on a long flight together, and the first thing he'd do is get his daps on and go for a run, and I'd be like, "Nah, mate, I'm hitting the bar." And it kind of made me like, in this time period, it's allowed me to reflect and change my reasons for running, and now I can say for the first time, actually, properly, irony because I've said, you know, I've kind of fessed up to something that I'm doing over the next couple of years, but I'm in a place now where I'm running because I love it. I go out for a run because I want to, with no particular aim or goal or whatever, and that's what I was kind of waiting for. I was waiting for that kind of aha moment, and I think I've only really hit that in the last year. I'm in a really good spot with my running. I think at the minute I'm getting I'm itching to run, which is always good. It helps. And I'm now running for the right reasons. So it's, I'm in a better spot.
And you live in France, right? So it's nice weather.
Pretty much so, yeah. It is. I said that, like, when I moved down from Leeds to here, down in Poole, it is just detached from everywhere, this place. It's mad. It's 2 hours from anywhere. And I'm actually probably, I am close. I can get to Paris quicker than I can Leeds now, which is a madness. But yeah, it is France.
I reckon, for the first, when I first started getting to know you properly, and I'd be seeing your Instagram stories, I'd be like, "Oh, Chris is on all day again." Like, but no, we're just on the beach, basically where you live.
Yeah, Yeah, and you know, the funny thing is that it is a beautiful place to run here. You know, I can pop on the chain ferry, I'm on the Purbex, and or I can run on the beach, and it is a beautiful spot. It's different though. When I started to run and really enjoyed running, I lived in the Pennines, so I was in this amazing spot for running, like right on my doorstep. I had probably quite similar to where you are now, where you live. You know, you've just got hills in any direction and trails in any direction, and I actually took that for granted, I think, because then when I moved to here, I'm actually in quite a big residentially built up area. I've got to run for a couple of k before I get to a trail. It is different, but it's good. And the fact that I've got so much good running, a car, you know, 10-15 minute car journey in any direction, well, maybe not south, that'd be rubbish running, but I can go in a car journey east, west or north and hit some good trails.
Yeah, good. And I already know your plans for the end of the year, which is, do people know? Are people allowed to know?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I've just announced it this morning, haven't I? So just not, I should have saved it for a couple of hours. You could have had it as an exclusive.
Well, I meant more the in January.
But I think my all of my plans now, personal plans, are kind of revolving around learning the Southwest Coast Path. So I've booked on for a couple of races. I'm doing, they're two Mud Crew events. I'm doing the one in August. It's like a 50K. No, it's not. It's 100K. I should probably know, shouldn't I? It's been a while since I booked. 100K race down on the coast there, which is a particular section that I've never seen. And then the Arc of Attrition in January, which is quite a meaty race, isn't it? So, they're the two kind of instant things on the horizon. And the whole reason for me booking onto those is just to learn bits of the Southwest Coast Path that I didn't or haven't been to, with a larger goal to try and run that whole trail quite quickly.
And when you've been in races in the past, because I know you haven't been in that many races in the last few years, how competitive were you in these races, and are you daunted by coming back to them?
It's always the same. I'm always the same. I always turn up saying I'm not going to be competitive, and then the thing goes, and then I go. I think I've got to be realistic with my performance for January. I've had a long time off, and if I was at the fittest I've been, I'd be hopeful for like a top 20. I don't think you can even, unless you've been doing races regularly, I don't think you can turn up to a race like the Arc of Attrition and just expect to appear in the top 10 or 20. It seems like it's quite a stacked field already. So being realistic with my goals for this January is just try and enjoy the 100 miler as much as possible, and if that's a thing. But also, you know, there'll be an underlying expectation from myself to not be rubbish. If I can get to the end of that 100 mile and be happy with my performance, which probably isn't going to be related to a position, more so how I feel at the end of it, I'll be happy. I think give me another year on that. Give me, you know, if I come back, there's a soft plan for me possibly doing it the January after and using this one as a learn the trail and learn a bit about the race and get used to running 100 miles again. There'll definitely be a competitive edge for me at some time. The last time I was properly competitive, I did a race up in, it was a 60 miler. I finished fourth and I had no right to be there. It's just on the day I decided that I wanted to run a bit and finished fourth on the day. So that's probably, I've not done anything massively. So in that regard, there's probably no expectation for me to do anything like a big race result. But I think people will expect me to do reasonably well just because I'm an RD of a race, and there's probably a certain expectation that comes with that, I reckon.
Yeah, maybe.
How do you think I would do? Like, what would your expectation be of me? That'd be interesting.
I'd expect you to go out all guns blazing and then blow up about halfway and then struggle to the finish.
You're probably right. And
I don't want an evenly paced top 10.
Yeah, and you can clip this and post it to me. when I spectacularly blow up at mile 19, you can clip this, put it up on your social, and tag me in it, and then I'll be like, yeah, he was right.
It's interesting though, because it is like sometimes. I mean, I don't feel it, but you sometimes it is an expectation as a coach to be doing things well, I guess, and as an RD of like a big company. And like I've been to your race and seen you work as an RD, yeah, it's like there is expectation there, which I don't think is a bad thing, because I kind of like use it as motivation a lot of the time. And it's not that I think the expectation is to win, but it is still to turn up and put in a good performance at least.
Yeah, and I think it's quite interesting, because I've been full circle with my running. I've got a lot more empathy for runners now. It probably make me a better coach, because I've always had the attitude, if you don't want to run, then don't run, or I'm not going to coach you if you're not motivated. You know, that was always my stance in the past, where now I have a bit more of a deeper understanding that, you know, there is more to life than running at times, and things can get in the way. But I think there will be expectation. That's just part and parcel of it. You know, if I want to be an RD in this world, and I want to coach, and I want to, you know, talk a game, I suppose I've got to turn up in some regard to perform. So, and you know, I quite like that. It's there's going to be no more expectation on me from other people than what I put on myself. I think that's part of the reason why I also had time off, is because I'm an absolute. It's probably my biggest flaw as a runner, is the pressure that I put on myself, and the fact that I couldn't train and run and do what I wanted to at full whack. That was a problem for me, and that's why things started to condense down.
Yeah. So you've got you've got the 100K, then the 100 miler. Do you think that is mainly because, you know, I know there isn't high, well, there's a certain amount of expectation, but sometimes I think we enter these races because you know what you'll need to have to do to do them will set you up for the coastal path. And if you don't do those, then you're not going to be able to handle the coastal path.
Yeah, I think so. I feel like a bit of a fraud at the minute, because like this morning I've said, I've kind of shared my intention. I don't tend to use my own personal social media too much. But this morning I kind of shared my intention to go for a record on the Southwest Coast, and I feel like a complete fraud because I'm in no way near the right shape to warrant an attempt yet. But in order to get to that point, I need to be doing these kind of races and performing well as a marker for that. So the 100K the 100K is my race to blow up, I think. I think that knowing I can do that and get all the stupid stuff out of my system then. I don't think I'll be particularly quick or perform too well, but I can go at that race and hopefully make all my mistakes there with the idea that I can turn up to January in the 100 miler a bit more humbled and approach it. No one wants to just go cold turkey into a 100 mile race after not racing for 4 years. It'd be a bit daft.
You'd be surprised at the emails I get, mate.
I'll rephrase that. With the expectation laid upon me, I'm kind of setting down soft markers rather than just rocking up to a 100 miler and nose diving into a cliff.
So let's go back to Beyond the Ultimate, because I want to speak about that a little bit. How did that kick off? Were you in it from the start? Okay. And just give us like the history of Beyond the Ultimate, really.
Well, that's got a mad origin story, really. I wasn't involved. I used to own a gym. How I got into the RD side is I used to own a gym. I was coaching and strength working and running about a bit myself. And then I walked into a running store one day, and I knew the owner quite well, because I ended up, you know, in my early running days, spending a near fortune on kit through that place. And as I walked through the door, he pointed at me and went, "That's your guy." And there was a chap in there called John who owned Beyond the Ultimate. And they were basically had just been founded. They'd been operational for months at the time, and they'd had this concept. There was two of them, but one was a knew a fair bit about running, and the other one was, let's say, the money, the finances and stuff like that. And they had a big fallout, and one left, and then it just left the guy without the real insight into the running industry on his own with a list of people to race in the jungle the following month. So he was in a bit of a pickle in this running store trying to get help desperately, and I just happened to walk in. And the owner said, yeah, he's your boy. And I was at a time in my life where I was looking for something new anyway. I kind of had a bit of a Stockholm syndrome in the gym where I was working. Mm-hmm. It was a lovely area, but it was a very small mining town. And, you know, it takes an hour to walk to the post office because you're catching up with everyone. I just knew that I had to find something that kind of detached me from that. So I looked at it as a sign. I went and interviewed the next day. I had no right to get the job. I had no real, not massive amounts of organizing anything commercially or to that scale. They hired me, and then 6 weeks later I was in the Peruvian jungle doing a race brief, finding it hard to believe that I was there. So it was pretty mad. We got through that, and then I kind of just realized at that point, this would be a good job. And then from there, we just slowly worked on things that, you know, they wanted out, I wanted in, they wanted less commitment, I wanted more commitment. And then in 2020, we made it official that I became like the majority shareholder and kind of took the company on. And then a little thing called COVID happened later that month, so things had to pivot quickly. But so yeah, even though we've been operational for some time, in my head I still feel like we're a new company, but we're not really. We've existed for about 7 or 8 years now. We've been operating events for 12, so we are quite an old company now. It still very much feels fresh and new in my head, because I think in the last couple of years only got it into the place where I could see it going. You know, we've got a full series now, and we've got the additional races like Highland and Rangers and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a fun job. And not all the time, but most of the time, it's a fun job.
You're very careful with not adding too much, I know. So you're not kind of spreading too thin, or you're not just adding races for any reason, really. There's a real ethos behind Beyond the Ultimate, I guess, and everything has to fit in with that. So that's what I want to know more about next, really. How do you go about, well, how did the first couple of races come about, and how have you added to the series so far?
It always tends to be circumstance, really, and we get quite a lot of offers about where to go with races and things. The whole idea of the series was that it's environmental based, so, you know, the desert, ice, jungle, mountain. We just wanted to pick the most epic places we could, and places that people can't go to on their own. You know, if you wanted to go race or run in the Amazon, that's going to take a lot of logistical time for you to do that. If you want to race out in the Arctic Circle, it's going to be really hard to do that. So we every location to pass its kind of matrix test for us has to be really remote. It has to be really unique. It can't just be a set of mountains or just a desert in the middle of nowhere. There has to be something unique. That normally revolves around wildlife or a unique story to the area as well. And then once the series got in place, the Rangers was again one of those weird opportunity moments where something happened and I took it and looked at that as an opportunity. And the same with Highland. Highland was just on the back of meeting a chap called Nick Watson, who you've met, and he said, come and look at this place. And surprisingly, we found a place on our home shores that kind of met the criteria of our global stuff. So it's all been through circumstance, but we actually say no to a lot more than we say yes to. So that's often sometimes hard, because we've had some really good opportunities that, in fact, actually I said no to one last week. I said no to a really good opportunity last week, but it's just, we've got to pick the right thing for us and not settle for average, I suppose. Try and have these. If you want pinnacle high value events, you've got to talk the talk and walk the walk. So yeah, it's an interesting time for us now, because we're not actively looking at adding any more races to our series, but obviously, of course, in 2020 we merged with the Spine race, so we're very, very busy with both companies at the minute.
And how does that, because I know, again, it's not like you made a big fanfare about the Spine race or anything like that, because it's obviously some kind of protected species, the Spine race. Without alienating the whole of the Spine race, were there things within the Spine race that you could see that were obvious changes that you could improve it, basically, as an experience?
Yeah, the Spine race is a funny one because the Spine race is a funny one because when COVID happened, we knew that we needed a UK event, and the talk with the Spine race had been going on for quite a while about us kind of coming on board. And it was either that or the Highland was our thinking pattern. Do we do the Highland or this? And we ended up doing both anyway, just because we saw the Spine made sense. We had largely the same teams. We worked together anyway as organisations. They needed warehousing and kit like that. We had that. We needed UK equipment and stuff to provide a UK race, and they had that. So the merger was almost like a perfect marriage. The one thing that I found really tough in particular, was that obviously the Spine was already an institution of a race. So you can't just, we were very aware that you just couldn't move in and start changing the furniture. Mm. You can't just come into someone's house and do all that. And it's very much owned by, even though it could be owned physically by someone, there's a big ownership of the Spine community, or the Spine family, as they call it. So we were very conscious, and we just sat for a while. We just sat with, we got the merger done, and we got the kind of business end of it done. And then we just sat and watched and learned and observed. And to be fair, 90% of that event is amazing, or was amazing, it doesn't need changing. But what's happened to the Spine race is it's logistically become this whole new beast. Mm-hmm. And it's become this whole new thing, and the logistics are catching up with it. And it happens with every growing organization. It gets bigger, and then you have to recruit and fill the backspace almost to make sure that you're ready to deal with it. And that's exactly what's happened with the Spine. But yeah, it's been hard because everything's a bit of a, it's more of a democracy than a dictatorship. It's probably the best way to describe it. You have to go through multiple channels to make changes, consider a lot of things, and it's a very complex race. So any small changes can have massive repercussions. So but I love it though. It's such a cool race. I'm so privileged to be part of that team. I think it's so cool just to watch it unfold every year, and it be part of the ultra running calendar. And my dream as an RD was always to own some of the biggest races in the world, and the Spine is that, isn't it? It's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, on UK shores.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It's huge.
And there was, what was the extra race added? Challenger North, or was it the South?
So the first edition was the Sprint, and then we made the so that they had the full race and the Challenger South.
That's
and
right.
then we've since our tenure the sprint came in and the Challenger North. So that's always been things that they've wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't ideas that we created. They just wanted to do. It's just that we allowed the mechanism for them to happen. So the sprint, which has become a race in its own right, is a great stop. It's a great first step for people. Going straight into a 109-mile race was quite tough for some, and we thought the sprint is a great step for those that want to try and build up rather than jumping straight into the Challenger. And then the Challenger North is arguably one of the, even though both sections are tough, the northern part for navigation and all that kind of stuff when you're tired is challenging. So we opened up the Challenger North for that reason as well. So it just made the event safer on the whole, that people could do these almost like hard recces for the big thing. But then what's happened is they've all spiraled off into their own events now and become races in their own right. So, it's interesting. And it just makes that first weekend of any spine race is chaos, because you've got like sprint winners winning and Challenger South people blowing up everywhere. And it's always good drama, because you've just got this all the time. You've got these races within races going on. There's no appetite at all for the spine to kind of grow into new events on UK shores, although there are races coming internationally. So that's going to be announced very soon.
Good. Would you race the spine, the full spine?
I would have loved, that would definitely be a race I'd do if I wasn't part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
I ran my desert race back in 2019 when I was training Kimball for an RD role.
Yeah, I've seen some of the clips of you severely hydrated. It looked.
And you know what? I love that race, because it's like, it's just a great area and a great race. It's a racer's race, that one, for multi-days. But I just couldn't fully enjoy it. I couldn't fully enjoy it, because you can't switch off. You're looking around at stuff. And, you know, there was a day I decided to race properly, and I was racing against what is a punter of mine. And, you just can't enjoy that moment as much when you race and get the result, because you feel a bit like a tit. So I spent the rest of the week after that just kind of milling around the middle of the pack or helping people out that needed it and stuff. And not to make myself sound like I was slamming it, I was definitely struggling on that event as well. I just wouldn't enter, which is another reason why I've gone for the ARC. It's just an event that I would do, and it's completely detached from anything I own, which allows me to enjoy it as a punter rather than an RD, I suppose.
Yeah. coaching wise and stuff, because I know you do a bit of coaching. Mm-hmm. What are the kind of people that you're coaching at the moment, or if at all, or is it more the adventure racing? Is it the multi-days? Is it a wide range of people, or who do you enjoy coaching?
I haven't coached for a long time properly now. I did a bit in COVID just to kind of meet some end meet in the early days when we weren't delivering events. It's always a skill that I fall back on. But I think, like, you'll probably find this, Gary, that, you know, when you're running as a runner or trying to be like the best runner you can, and coaching is quite tough, because where do you kind of fragment your time? And coaching takes a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of, you know, especially it depends what type of client base you have, but sometimes, you know, they can be quite, if you're making yourself available to them and stuff. So I decided that if I can't offer a good coaching service, then I won't offer one at all. So I've not been coaching for a while, but I still consider, like, there's still an itch to scratch there. I still like coaching. I still like helping people. So what we have at BTU is like an RD service where people can call me up, and I don't program for them, but I'll say, what are you doing? Look at it and go, right, maybe you want to consider this, and here's some stuff, and here's a video, and here's some whatever. But the actual hard coaching I don't do anymore. I started off in a strength coaching background, so I used to do a lot of strength coaching, and then transitioned into endurance stuff probably about 4 or 5 years into that. So I've got where most run coaches, I think, come from a running background, I started in a strength coaching background and then changed it to running. So I've probably got a different way of working, I suppose, than what most running coaches would do with strength. But yeah, so not coaching anymore, but I do enjoy it. And the people that I do enjoy the most is anyone that's just receptive to learning. And you'll probably find this as well, that kind of comes with a natural level of discipline. You don't mind motivating people. You don't mind kind of showing them the ropes, but it becomes a lot harder as a coach, I think, when you also have to basically tie laces and help them out the door. That's when I particularly lost patience. I didn't have a lot of time for that as a coach. I think I would probably do now if I started coaching again, because I understand that a bit more. But definitely a few years ago, I probably didn't have the patience for that kind of person, and just enjoyed people that would do their program regularly without any intervention. They were the best. But back when I was coaching, online coaching wasn't really a thing. That's another thing. Yeah, it makes me sound really old. But online coaching wasn't really a thing. It was more face-to-face, or it was just really time-consuming. It was phone calls and all this kind of stuff. So, it was a bit different.
I think, the landscape has changed so much. Like, when I started doing it, I didn't fully understand how it could be a career as an online coach. I only knew, like, one of our friends, Robbie Britton, that was doing it properly, that I could see could make it work. And anyone that came to me for coaching then, like you say, didn't need hand-holding. They were really motivated. They just needed the guidance and maybe some education. They were the only people that seemed to want or come to coaching, whereas now, you could have someone that wants to run twice a week and needs pushing out the door kind of thing. And it's, you either have to have a conversation with them, with yourself, and there is a good middle ground, because I enjoy the coaching side of thing, of getting to understand what's stopping them maybe, because I'm quite good at filtering out the people that just need a cheerleader. And I think there are just cheerleading coaches out there, that will just tell them everything's great, or if they have a week off, everything's great kind of thing. I don't think you need to be a cheerleader as a coach. But at the same time, yes, as I got a bit older and coaching, like you said, there's lots of coaches out there. It's your coaching style has to match them to a certain extent. I still haven't got time for the people that are not going to get out at all kind of thing. And just so that they can say they've got a coach.
Well, it's kind of hard to coach someone that doesn't run, right?
Mm.
It's kind of hard for you to coach them if you're programming them and they're not doing it. So the first thing is, someone's got to kind of do some version of what you're suggesting. But I think that's where community comes in, and you seem to have a great one with your guys, is that if the community can rely on each other for motivation, and you're at the, kind of top of that, providing the structure, then you've got a good coaching system, and multiple coaches within a system works and helps. But I think if you, and that's where I never went all in on coaching enough to get that. I always had a number of people where it was just direct response to me and direct response back, where if you can get to that point where you've got community, that power of the pack, then that's probably more powerful than a coach telling you to come on, get out the door and all that kind of thing. Because a coach can show empathy, but ultimately it's got to come from the person or the people that are training. And I think, that's the difference. So you're probably at this nice spot now where you've got a nice community of runners under your kind of stewardship who help each other out. I'm not part of any kind of Facebook groups, but I imagine there's a nice little thing there. And that, once you've got that, not to devalue you, Gary, but that is a really valuable service that you've built. And then you come in to kind of mop up the goods, I suppose. You kind of fill the gaps and make sure they're getting the results off the back of that. So yeah, I think that's what I've learned now. So if I was to kind of hit a reset button on coaching, that's what I'd do. But you just can't coach, run, RD, be a dad. I don't know. I had to move from I had to move out of one bucket, basically. My partner describes it as that, as you can't have a bucket full of water for each one. You've got to take from each one. So my idea at the minute was to focus on the running, my business primarily, and then I'm just starting to get a bit of time back to focus on running for myself. So yeah, I'm excited for the next couple of years, and hopefully I can put what all the stuff I've learned and try and coach myself, which is probably going to be my hardest client. Because I am awkward to work with. So coaching myself is going to be pretty tough.
Have you wrote yourself a plan, or are you not at that stage yet?
I'm at that point where I've got the habit that there was no point in writing myself a plan because I wasn't even getting the basics right. So I've just got the basics right. I'm running for 3 to 6 hours a week. I'm rowing as well, which I'm enjoying. So that's been quite good. I'm at that point now where my body is not ready for the volume, but my mind is. So I'm just slowly, which is great. It's a great place to be in. I'm just slowly taking the volume up now. So I seem to get a good window of training in, and then I go away for work for a couple of weeks, and then I don't get to run as much. So the idea is now that I'll probably do another block, wait until about March, April time, and then I will start properly programming for myself. And yeah, that will hopefully get me through till August, where my first race is going to let me know whether that program was good or not.
Yeah.
But I also might rely on you or Robbie or some other coaches to, they always say every coach needs a coach, right? So
they do. I think you'll
never write the best program for yourself.
I think it goes in phases. I think I really valued having a coach for 5 or 6 years, and then I've not had a coach for the past 18 months. But it's like you say, it was a point where I was having to crowbar the sessions in. It wasn't that the plan wasn't a great plan or the sessions weren't great. It was more, I just want to go and run with friends in the mountains, say, or I've got the kids at an age where they're just doing school clubs and things. So, yeah, it's just, and again, once you've been coached for X amount of time, you've got X amount of knowledge, you kind of know where you need to be at for certain things. And then you have like a good, I've got quite a good kind of peer system around me that I can lean on a little bit if I need advice, and that kind of gets you through. And there might be another time, like if I was going to try and train for my best ever marathon, I'd probably go back to another coach because I think I would need it for that kind of thing.
I think I would agree with you on that. If I was going for like a 10K, anything marathon and below time, I'd use a coach because there's no way. I don't enjoy that type of training as much. I did one last night, actually. I did a you know, 5x500s and all that kind of club running stuff, and I don't enjoy it. I'm just doing it at the minute because I'm aware that that's a quick way for me to get results now, while you know the volume's not there. But yeah, if it was that type of training, I'm not motivated by minute miles and all that kind of stuff. So I would have to bring myself a coach on board if I wanted to do that. For me, the best thing for programming for me personally, and maybe some of your clients can relate to it, is just the one that offers the most flexibility. If I have a beautifully written program for me, it could be layered out macros per day, pace for this, all these kind of wonderful sessions. It's almost pointless when I've got a toddler that's being picked up from nursery because she's too ill today or whatever like that. It just kind of, I can't plan for that stuff. So my program, there's a good chance that most of my program for this year will be like run for 6 hours in a low steady heart rate and then try and do half an hour of the heavier stuff and float around that until you can get some more, and then maybe add some metrics in, like measure your meterage of climb. If you can get to like 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 meters of climb in a week, happy days. And just, it sounds incredibly simple, but for me that will work. And then as I get very close to the event, then I'll start thinking about, you know, specific event training. But there's no point in going too specific if I haven't got the base mileage in. And you know, that's, if I'm honest, that's the stuff I enjoy. I enjoy the kind of, I struggle the loop running, you know, just going out for an hour, looping around and finishing back at your house. I much prefer when I do the longer stuff, like when I get back to doing the longer stuff, I'll get a train to Weymouth, which is about an hour away on a train, and run home and like run walk in the hill, because it's a point to point. There's a sense to it.
Yeah.
If you said to me, go out for a 25 mile circular route outside my house, I'd really struggle. So I try and turn like the long training runs into adventures. And that's what a lot of my training will be. It's what, if I'm going to do the Southwest Coast Path any justice, I've just got to get as much climbing in and long days. It's, there's no, there's no hack to that. That's what I've got to do. So I'm just going to build up slowly and try and build that volume up so I don't end up with any niggles or injuries. I feel older now. I feel older than when I last run. Like, things are, my recovery is a little bit slower, and it is because I'm nowhere near as fit, but I'm having to be a bit careful that there's this inner child in me that wants to just go and run 60 mile weeks, and if I do that, I'm going to blow my back up or whatever.
Yeah, I had a calf strain a few weeks ago.
I'll sit and suck my Werther's Originals.
Yeah, it's definitely an
And well, it's because you're old.
Exactly,
then,
I've never had one. I don't think I've ever had one.
Give up.
And I went to the physio and he said, "How old are you again, Gary?" I said 39. He goes, "Yeah, a year either side of 40 is when you start getting them."
You're 39?
40 this year.
Oh, you give me hope, mate. You give me hope.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you give me hope.
Yeah.
I've still got plenty of time. I'm a spring chicken.
Exactly. So, but how much did becoming a dad change things in a I imagine in a positive way?
Yeah, I mean, we had a particular journey to have Ari. You know, we went through IVF and stuff, and it was a long time to get her. So I was definitely focused on making the most of it once she arrived, and still am. But it definitely, the biggest change for me was my gene size, I think. I used to run and race at around about 75 kilo. That was what my walking weight would be. Like, if someone says, "What do you weigh?" 75 kilo. I'd go up a bit, I'd go down a bit. That's where I was. I am now, as you record this with me, 86, and that feels fundamentally different when you run. 86 feels massively different to 75. So that's another thing that I've got to factor in, is that I'm a lot bigger at the minute until that weight comes
and
down.
And you're 5'2", aren't you?
I'm not that short.
I'm 64 kilos, and before 30 I was 60, so it does creep up. Well, no, 61 maybe.
I don't think I would ever be that. If I was 64 kilo at 6 foot, I would look very different.
You don't want to be that at 6 foot.
I wasn't even that when I, in 2000, and I don't know when it was, I think it was like 2015, I ran and cycled the coastline of the UK. Mm. And I was either ran a marathon or cycled 100 mile day after day for a month. And I came back and I wasn't below 75 kilos. So if that can't get me to below 70, I've got no chance in hell of getting there. So I know that 74, 75 kilos is probably what I will be, or what I'd like to be, stood on the start line in January, albeit what my Christmas is like might depend on that. But I definitely won't be 86, because that is not conducive to running up hills, is what I've found.
Yeah.
It makes a huge difference.
How many times a year do you have to go away with work with these events? Four?
I'm out of the country for about 6 months of the year.
Yeah.
Six.
And have you done a full year of that yet?
Because we've been doing double. So I did 6 months of the year away last year, which was quite tough. Mm. I'm away for 6 months this year. I'm including total time out of the house, like even the spine race, I'm counting that, where I might be up north for 2 weeks. But I'm away for about 6 months of the year, and Ari's getting to an age now where she knows I'm away.
Mm.
So what we're trying to do is grow the team at Beyond the Ultimate Spine that I'm not at everyone, which is why Kimball is coming on board. I don't know if you've heard about him, but he's a pretty good runner. There's a lot more people coming into the team that can help with that kind of stuff, which means that maybe I took my first step back from a Beyond the Ultimate race in November. I didn't go to the desert. That was the first one.
Mm.
And the plan is that at least one or two a year is what I'll back up on.
Yeah. I think you've got to have that. Otherwise, 3 or 4 years time, you'll need it. Definitely. Like, I can't go away for a weekend without tears and tantrums, and it's fine once I've actually gone, actually, and I've come back with a present. But like I say, like before that, I was away for racing all the time, or training with people all around the country, whereas now it's like, okay, I have to plan in the fact that when was the last time I left, like, it's my daughter, really, for one night. The lad doesn't care, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, it's more that I missed her first steps.
Yeah.
I was in Sweden when she did her first steps. And you can be so connected now anyway. So I got a video like pretty much as it happened and when it happened. It's nowhere near the same. But like my thinking now is, how can I structure the business to a point where I don't miss first sports day?
Yeah.
You know, first whatever. And so that's my motivation now, is like not to kind of, I'll always want to be away on these events. It's what I love and what I do. But and one day I look forward to the day that I take her on these things. But my main priority at the minute is, how do I get my business into a position where I can make sure that I don't miss important stuff, especially because we're looking at planning on, you know, baby number two in the next year or so. And then it all begins again. And it's tough. Every business person or everyone that owns a business is going through the same thing, right? It's just with a part and parcel of my job is I end up being out of the house. And it's a cool thing to be able to tell your kids that, you know, you go off exploring and doing this adventure stuff. But I don't think she will care when she's three or four. She'll just want me there.
Yeah.
Is what I'm thinking. Is this is the stage that we're going into now with her, is that she's going to be three or four and she won't care that I've got this cool job. She'll just actually be more bothered that I'm not there to see ballet or drop her off. So yeah, it's tough, but it's just part and parcel of the job at the minute, and we'll work our way around it. And then she'll probably chill out when she's 18 and she's jumping out of helicopters and all that kind of stuff with her dad.
Yeah, when she's the RD and you're sat at home with your pipe.
That's all it's for. It's just training her up. Yeah, she might be like her mum. Her mum is not the outdoorsy kind of person. Her mum famously said that she loves the outdoors but hates it when it touches her. So she might be like that and not come on these kind of gigs with me. But she might also be like me and just get straight involved and sleep on floors and all that kind of jazz. Who knows?
Yeah. Or in marquees. Yeah.
Or in marquees. Yeah, well, that was a rough night, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a rough night.
I won't keep you much longer, but we've both got Noi Dart coming up because I'm going to take part this year. Because it's a UK race, do you find that it has a different feel, or what should people expect from the Highland Ultra with Beyond the Ultimate? Because there might be people that look at Beyond the Ultimate and maybe not have the opportunity to get out to some of the ones further afield, but Highland Ultra, what is it, 3 days, I think, and it's on UK soil. So what is the difference, maybe?
I think if you've done multi-days in the past, it's a good step back if you're looking at stepping back from, you know, 5-day races are a lot of time commitment, aren't they? So if you've done things like the MDS and all that kind of stuff, we're finding that actually we set this up as a pre-event to our bigger stuff and people can come and see what we're about and all that kind of stuff. But actually we're finding a lot of people are coming backwards as well. Mm. So if you've done multi-days and you're thinking, you know what, I haven't got the finances or the time to commit to a 5-day, then this is a good gnarly little event that will test you and give you all the kind of stuff that you get out of the 5 days and the three. If you haven't done anything like this before and you've kind of eyeing up the big stuff, like a big kind of glitz and glamour event, then this is probably as much as you're going to get a taste of what we do here on British soil. So if you're listening as a Brit, Noi Dart is, as you'll probably found as well, it's obviously part of the British mainland, but it almost doesn't feel like it, does it? Mm. It feels like it's detached from everywhere, and it's one of the last kind of places in this country where, you know, you haven't got phone signal and all that kind of stuff, so you can detach. There's a value to that. But the thing is with it, you are on UK soil. So you still have the, you know, on our big stuff, you haven't got the NHS that is there as a safety net and all that kind of stuff. So it's probably the most adventurous thing you can do, I would say, on UK soil over 3 days. And it's achievable for anyone, but it is a quite a challenging area. You know, you think of the Lake District, think of Snowdonia, and just add like just dial it up a tiny bit more in terms of the way that the kind of place looks and feels with weather, and you're about there. I think that's probably the best. So if you've walked up Scafell or you've walked up Mount Snowdon and or Ben Nevis and all that kind of stuff, you'll know what a hill feels like and what terrain feels like underfoot. Just literally dial the adventure dial up a tiny bit more and you can have 20 different weather systems in a day. It's probably the biggest obstacle of Noidart. And the year that you came first, we had a bit of everything, didn't we? We had like nice days and monolithic rains the final day. But that, the last year we did it, we had 3 days of amazing sunshine. I came back with a tan, which will never happen again, I don't think. But it's a mad place. It's a coastal mountainous region, so it comes with sea breezes and high winds and differences in temperature from, you know, bottom to the top of those Munros. You can literally see chaotic weather with your eye while it's nice and calm below. So yeah, it's a pretty special place.
I think as soon as you step on a boat to get to an event, you start to feel, because I remember thinking, well, because I've been to Malag before and it's, that feels like you're at the end of Scotland kind of thing, but to get on a boat and to go again, you, as soon as you land, you do feel detached. And it's a little bit like you say, you can go around in the Lake District and have some lovely runs and hills, but you always drop down into a village or a town even the majority of the time. Once you go up to Scotland, it kicks up another level. You can be lost for well, days if you wanted to be, but
yeah.
Noidart, that kind of journey going up that way.
North West Coast.
It is. It's like I think because it's coastal as well, it gives it another extra edge.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things that people can look at our races, and I think they probably do. They look at our races, they see a price tag on it, and they go, "Oof, that's steep." But then you've got to pair with that, with all the stuff that goes back to the community, and when you're looking at responsible ecotourism like we do, where everything goes back into the area and you're recruiting locally and hiring locally and all that kind of stuff, it comes with the price. So what you get is, you do get a slight, there's no hiding about it, you know, our races do have a slightly higher price tag than most, but you are doing it responsibly. You are traveling and racing responsibly with carbon offsetting and all of the lovely things. And we're probably not as good as we could be as an organization at touting about how much stuff we do. That's probably the main difference with this area. This is an area which it can live off grid completely. It's a community of 100 people that owns the land that it lives on, and is a shining light of how we could live in another world if the political parties and the, you know, if we didn't end up with the democracy that we have now in this world. It could quite easily be little pockets of 100 at a time, and they have their own power. They have their own sustainable food projects. They have their own employment locally. They have a wood Noidart, which we use, and all these kind of revenue streams to keep the peninsula alive and active. It is just a really remarkable place. I'm not aware of any other place like that in Europe, never mind. There might be some odd little places like that across Africa and sub-Saharan Africa and South America, but I can't think of anywhere across the Americas and stuff like that works like Noidart does. It's a pretty spectacular place.
Yeah, and you get that sense, although I didn't race it, I was obviously at that event, and because you get to hear from the
Chief
local...
Chief Tent Carrier.
Yeah, Chief Tent Carrier.
I've never seen someone run so many miles carrying two tents.
Yeah, I mean, most people have wrapped up FKTs for now, but I've got the FKT for a tent across Noidart. I know that much.
No doubt in my mind have you got the FKT for tent carrying. There's no one on this planet that has carried a tent further and faster than you have.
Not only that, to get it to the finish, only to find out that they already had enough tents.
Yeah, that's one of those classic things that always happens logistically. Is you over that was an over plan of like, I don't think we've got enough tents, and so we moved some tents up the course by hand with Gary, and nope, we had enough tents. It's
funny, isn't it? Because like I'm usually in. It was funny exercise. Because you have like I know other race directors and I've sat in on races and things, and it's always funny to see from the outside. It's like those little things. It's like. And that's what it takes almost. I think, oh, Gary, can you take this tent to checkpoint whatever by hand? But as a racer, you don't see any of that. You don't experience any of that. And it's quite good fun.
No, And that one logistically is tough, you know. It's actually really tough. Everything has to go over on a boat and back on a boat and round by a boat, and it's all timing. Like Kat, I don't know how she does it. My brain doesn't work that way. But her brain is like a spreadsheet, and she can manage boat trips and times and all that kind of stuff. So everyone, if you ever, for any aspiring RDs out there, find a Kat. That's all you have to do. Find a Kat Martin, and they will make your world a lot easier, is what you have to do. She is an incredible human being.
If it's okay, I'm going to catch up with you later in your training, so this can be some of your accountability to see how it's going for mainly the Southwest Coastal Path, but yeah, we'll catch up later in the year if that's okay, mate.
Okay. Have you just become my coach, Gary House?
No. No, I said I'm not a cheerleader.
Okay, well, great. I appreciate the accountability buddy, which is obviously a very important coaching tool. I will check in with you no doubt soon, and hopefully the next time you physically see me, I'll be less human. There should be less of me. So
well, I'm going to see you in a few weeks, aren't I?
Accountable measure.
Chris King, race organizer. Where can we find, I guess your stuff is Beyond the Ultimate, is it? Where can we direct people to?
Yeah, so Beyond the Ultimate is the best site or best place to see what I do on a day-to-day basis. I've got my own Insta stuff and Facebook channels, but I'm Chris with a K, spelt wrong, so K-R-I-S. I'm sure there'll be LinkedIn bios and stuff, but yeah, just be happy to speak to anyone that wants to chat and find out a bit more, I'll refer you back to Gary with coaching tips and cues because he's far more knowledgeable than I am.
Good stuff, mate. And yes, I will see you in Noida then, or maybe before that.
See you in a few weeks, mate.
Cheers. Thank you, Chris.
See you in a few weeks. Get ready. It's going to be ace.
Well, cheers, mate.
See you later, mate.
Bye-bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.